You done dicking with your computer there, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys ready to get started?
I'm just letting the files go.
I'm going to make a loud smack here so I can take the better quality audio that my computer records and then overdub it to the video later. So I'll tell you. That should show up real good on the timeline.
Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
That's loud as shit. Let's try that again. Turn that volume down. I haven't done a podcast in fucking a month.
Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
Oh crap, wrong button. God damn it. Good thing we're not live anymore.
Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
Digitized live from
your company name here.
Studios in Cape Coral, Florida. It's the What's in Your Head podcast.
What's up, OG5? It's been a while, but that opener still cuts off like an old son of a bitch because I still haven't remade it. But don't worry, we got a lot of things we got to remake here in 2024. Holy shit, it's 2024. I can't believe I've been doing this podcast since 2018. And you know what? That's a long fucking time. It's been almost 6 years now. We're going into our sixth year, and I think it's about time we do a little format change up again because if you guys listen to podcasts, which obviously you do, you've been here. The whole idea, concept of a podcast having that radio show format has really gone to the wayside. It's more of a free form, hanging out, bullshitting type format seems to be the way things are going. So we're no longer going to do this live, even though that's kind of conducive to that format. But we're going to start pre-recording this, putting a little editing, a little value into it, so that if we end up discussing something at length, I can go back later and insert clips here and there so that the audience, maybe who isn't aware of what we're talking about, we can catch them up to speed. But we'll bring all that on later. Joining us tonight, the man who's about to make the faithful leap into marriage coming up this weekend is Mike. What's going on, Mike?
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Just living the dream. Just working and not fishing because, well, for some reason, we got into a wormhole, went into summertime here in Florida. The rain's insane. The lightning. My boss has a lightning app on his phone because we're hearing kaboom, kaboom, and like you couldn't even count 1/1000. By the way, Larry Venturina's back. Hi, Larry.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good. Real quick, you know, we couldn't even count the 1/1000, and he was looking like, yep, that one hit the stop sign down the street. Oh, that last one hit the canal right across. So, like, literally, lightning was bombarding our office today. But it's been... Rain finally stopped 2 hours ago. I was kind of concerned that I might have to cancel the podcast for fear that the internet might drop out, but here we are. Larry, congratulations, buddy. Things are going your way. Look at you. Big moves. First and foremost, let's talk about
keep the hustling
and grinding, fella. Let's talk about the semi-newly formed Venturino Talent Agency. You finally decided to start representing some of the people you know, and you have a few big names on your newly acquired Rolodex that you're representing people. Yeah. How did that come about?
Yeah, so basically, you know, I've been booking punk bands and comedians and everything for like 25 years. And then I decided to make it more official and just kind of just make the agency an official, you know, booking and talent agency. So Venturino Talent Agency was born. And so I started by kind of like getting some of the acts that I book around town or throughout the country a little bit that I have close personal friends with, you know, to start on the roster. But then I'm already on to some bigger names as well. And some of like, you know, some comedy legends and people that I, you know, I grew up with. And it's kind of cool to be able to reach out and help them get booked around the country.
And obviously, you know, it's interesting speaking of this format. Something like that is something like a podcast. You know, when you first start, you got to go to somebody and say, hey, come over here. Let me, your case, represent you. In my case, let me interview you. And like, well, A, I've never heard of you. Or, yeah, I know you're a friend of mine. Yeah. Once you start getting some recognize names on your Rolodex, right, or in this case, interviewing people on my podcast, or What's the Scuttlebutt podcast. Once you get some of those bigger names coming, the people who may have been a little more reluctant to begin with, come on a little quicker.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So the thing is, like, people, you know, especially hopefully in Florida, you know, I've produced so many shows over the years, and I hope I have a decent reputation to, like, put on good shows, pay people, and give them, like, quality opportunities. So people know and can trust me that, you know, I was going to help them out. And so the people that kind of, like, latched on right away, I really appreciate them that they believed in me. There were some people that were a little bit reluctant, but, like, they didn't understand that, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. But, you know, the agency is kind of brand new officially, but you know I was going to bust my butt to get some bigger names and to help everybody out. And so the people that didn't believe in me right off the bat, well, that opportunity is gone. For whatever that's worth, I'm moving on to other things. So, I mean, I reached out to people who I felt could use my services, and, you know, most of them were very happy to hear from me and kind of, you know, appreciated that. There was a couple people who weren't really into it, or I could tell, because they thought they were at a different level. Well, you know, now it's kind of like, well, they're kind of on their own now. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
am I bitter? Does that sound bitter?
No, I'm trying to, a guy's been doing podcasting for 6 years out of his fucking his bedroom and got nowhere. So no, you don't sound bitter at all. But, you know, to that being said, you know, some people have a hard time after they put in years. Maybe they don't put in the effort, but they put in the years. Yeah. And one of the hardest things to do is to sit back, look in a mirror, assess the situation honestly.
Right.
And go from there. And I think that is where we see a lot of people who quote unquote get triggered or offended on when it comes to things on the internet. Now, I'll give you the perfect example. Last 6 months or so, I've been trying to get back and running, especially after we went to Mike's bachelor weekend and
bachelor.
His buddy Ron, who hasn't seen me in, like, I don't know, a year.
Yeah.
He saw me back when I was at the height of my running, doing savage races and all that. And he looked at me and said, "What the fuck happened to you? You got fat."
Wow. Uh-oh.
About a month and a half prior to that, the guy at the UPS store where I filmed my TikTok video that went semi-viral at 1.7 million, where the UPS driver was yelling at the guy who locked his dog in the car. That used to be my go-to mailbox when at Computer Zone, because I couldn't have a bunch of expensive shit dropped off from my front door. So I was paying the outrageous $230 a year for a UPS box. I canceled that box because I don't need it anymore. But from time to time, I still ship out stuff for Digital 410. Walked into there. Now, this is before Ron saw me. Jeff said, "What the fuck happened to you? You got fat."
Oh, no.
And then I had another person essentially say the same thing. I'm like, okay, clearly with my new job, I've gained some weight. And so one of the things I decided to start working out and running, I've already ran 72 miles walked and ran 72 miles in the last 15 days. But to my point, I joined a Facebook group called Slow as Fuck Running. Because one of the reasons I stopped running is I got injured. And then as I got older, I started developing plantar fasciitis, so I can't run as fast as I used to. At my prime, when I was like 37, I was down to 207 pounds. If I busted my ass running around my neighborhood, I think my record is a 7-minute mile. Now I'm at 15. But I say all that, there's people on there who are posting clips of their 10-minute miles or 12-minute miles or 7-minute miles or 8-minute miles. And there's other people on there saying, "Hey, this is called the Slow as Fuck Run group. You guys aren't slow runners." And they're getting offended. They're getting triggered because other people on this group who can run faster than them, that's making them look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Back to our previous conversation. And they don't like the fact that we're on a group called Slow as Fuck Run group, but there's people who run faster than them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you got to remember, we're all here running our own run because that's what running is. You're running your own run and you're on your own journey. Yes, some people are new runners who can't run a 15-minute mile. They're still running 18 minutes. And they might see 15 minutes fast. But then you have old fucks like me who got injured, who put on 30 pounds and now has plantar fasciitis, where I used to be able to run an 8-9 minute mile leisurely. Now I'm at 15. So yes, 15 may seem fast to you, but in my journey, in my race, that is slow.
Yeah.
But why are you getting offended by my 15-minute mile? Well, that's because my 15-minute mile is making you look in the mirror and saying, here's this 45-year-old old guy with bad feet. And I'm 22 and he runs faster than me. And that makes people don't like to look in the mirror. They don't like to have that self evaluation.
Yeah.
But I think if you talk to anybody who's truly successful, and I'm not, but people who truly are, self evaluation and self reflection is like a regular routine. Mm-hmm. Where am I at? Where do I want to be? How do I get there? And so back to, you know, some of your friends who were a little reluctant to take you on because you're the new guy in town and they felt they're more established in that.
Yeah.
They didn't want to stop and maybe take that look in the mirror to truly evaluate maybe where their career is at and see if having new representation would be beneficial to them or not.
Yeah, because I mean, I really bust my butt for everybody that's on my roster and everything. And honestly, being with me is like a win-win because I'm not an exclusive agent, which means people, if they get booked on their own, that's totally fine. And they can make all the money and they can do all that. That's great. If I work to get them a gig or get them into a venue, that's the only time I profit from anything. And so if I don't hustle or if I don't get them a gig, then I don't make money. They don't make money. And so what was the harm of me trying to reach out on their behalf to get gigs for them? Well, now, you know, I've signed, or you know, not even really signed. It's like I work with Kevin McDonald from the Kids in the Hall, legendary comedian Bob Nelson, Tom Rhodes, who had Comedy Central specials. He was on MTV all through the 90s and early 2000s. Dennis Regan, Brian Regan's brother. You know, these guys are all solid acts who I send out an email and people are like, yeah, when can they come to town? And I think that helps everybody on my roster. So, yeah, there's people that are not at Kevin McDonald's level in the sense of, you know, notoriety, but I tried to represent all different acts that are solid acts. And so by getting the attention through Kevin or Tom Rhodes or whoever, these other acts that are on my roster are also getting attention. So that could have been other people, but whatever.
Well, and the other advantage is, A, you're new, not new to the industry, but your company's new. You're hungry because you want to build a reputation. You want to build a name for yourself. Yeah. But you don't come with the baggage that some of these larger, well-known historical talent agencies have. And I'll give you an example. One thing Adam Carolla used to joke around is because his agent has Jon Stewart, Jimmy Kimmel, bigger names than him. Sometimes that agent gets stuck in bigger name mindset. And Adam Carolla will find out what? He'll find out through, he'll be somewhere and find out, oh, 6 months ago, we reached out to your agent, tried to book you for a gig, but he said, oh, Adam won't roll out of bed for less than X, Y, or Z amount of money. Instead of contact Adam, say, hey, these people want to know if you'll do this gig for this money.
You don't even ask.
Yeah. No, he don't ask because he's in the Jimmy Kimmel, you know, Jon Stewart mindset, not the Adam Carolla who wants to do everything all the time mindset.
Yeah.
And so,
well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know that, like, I was, like, heavily involved with, like, Laughing Comedy Cafe. Now it's called Snappers up in Fort Myers. But when my friend Brian owned it, I was helping him book acts. And I said, hey, Brian, do you mind if I try to reach out to get some bigger names to come to the club that haven't been here before? And there was one, I mean, I'll just tell, I don't even care, like Henry Cho, who's been a mainstay in comedy for years and years and
What's
years.
What's that clicking noise?
I reached out to his agent multiple times, and I got no response. And I found Henry's email, and I said, hey, listen, I'm trying to go through your agent to offer you a weekend here at Fort Myers. You've never performed at this club, and I thought it would be cool to bring you to town. But I got to tell you, I said, your agent doesn't respond. And so we booked it through him, through Henry. And I'm like, you don't understand. I mean, maybe he does. I mean, he's been around for a while. I'm like, these comedians and the other acts, they don't understand that their agents don't respond to people. If it's not, like you said, a big money or a big name mentality where they're not going to get thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for something, they don't even want to respond. Whereas, so my outlook on it, I don't care if it's a small show or a big show, any offer that comes through for one of my acts, I send it their way. They can say, no, I don't want to do that, or I can't, or blah, blah, blah. And that's fine, but I'm not going to like not do the work because they might want to do it.
And for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the name, Henry Cho has been around forever. Korean guy, yeah. Tennessee accent. Mm-hmm. He'd make fun of his friends, kind of like Fluffy would do. One of his punchlines back in the day, what's that clicking noise, making fun of his friend?
Yeah.
But A, he's never been to Fort Myers. But B, what a better place to work out new material than Snappers in Fort Myers, Florida, opposed to going down to an improv, a laugh-in, one of those places where you're still working out your material, but the audience may not understand you're working out your material and say, wow, I saw Henry Cho here and his act is suffering. No, it's not suffering. He's trying. People don't realize in comedy you have to work out material. You don't just write something in a weekend. Just like a band. Mike's a drummer in a band. You don't just come up with a song while driving down the street and go and perform it next week, and you got to have band practices. You got to figure out what works. Okay, well, let's move the bridge to here. I mean, Larry, you're in a band as well, you know. Yeah. Let's change the tempo. Let's play around with the arrangements. You know, that chorus sucks, or, you know, the hook kind of needs to be worked on. You work all that thing out, and then you get it smooth. And comedians do the same thing, but they don't do it at their buddy's house in their garage on a Wednesday night. They go to these small clubs that may have open mic night, or maybe aren't sold out on a Wednesday. Perfect example. Here's why, Mike, it pays to have a Larry Venturino in your pocket. Minding my own business one night. He says, you need to come down to the comedy club in 2 hours. What? Yeah. Can't tell you why. Just come down here. Went down there. Ron White had booked one of the bigger clubs in the weekend, but he hadn't performed in a while. So he reached out to, it was still Laughing at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I got to see Ron White do a warm-up act at a very, very small venue. How cool is that? And so, and I mean, you don't get more intimate than a small venue like that. And so for true diehard fans of, you know, of a comedian or an artist to see them in that smaller venue, that's like awesome. That's like almost when you hear back in the day, you hear a pop-up show like, oh, John Cougar showed up at this small bar in Jersey, or Sting showed up here and did a small set, you know, without announcing it. And that's the stuff your fans truly enjoy. And that's how you get new fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's talk about your next big step, which is very cool. You and I got in contact back when I was working in radio. I was looking for someone putting on an improv troupe, and you had Kevin McDonald in town, and you guys were and you've done that a few times. With the exception of the venue we just talked about, the big name one down in, used to be in Marco, now it's in Naples. And I think maybe there's a small venue up in Port Charlotte. There's not too many comedy clubs in Southwest Florida, right? Like established ones, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, there's basically the three main ones. I don't even mention the one in Naples. I could give a shit. Yeah. Snappers in Fort Myers. And then the one you talked about in Port Charlotte is Bassani's, which is a really beautiful club. Actually, it seats like 250. It's really a beautiful place. And the shows are always really good there, too. But so I decided, because I've been touring a lot, I've been on the road a lot and traveling all over the country, and which basically takes up usually Wednesdays through Sunday. And I decided to reach out to a local hotel to see if I could open a comedy club inside their hotel. And I'm actually going to be doing the shows on Monday and Tuesday nights, which might sound crazy to people, but again, it gives me a chance to travel, but also there are visitors that are coming to Estero from all over the world that have nothing to do in this town on a Monday and Tuesday night. They can come downstairs, have something to eat, go into the show and see like a great comedy show. And so I can bring in different acts, especially if they're like tacking on some Monday and Tuesday off night shows after they've done a weekend somewhere else in Florida. Mm-hmm. So it's just another way for them to kind of come and make some extra money and do my room.
Especially if you're a traveling comic, a road dog, not a well established. I can afford a plane ticket to fly out overnight, but a road comic, as you said.
Yeah.
Maybe they did Orlando one night, they hit Tampa the next night, Sarasota.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I got a Monday or Tuesday to kill. Let's head down to Fort Myers. Or maybe I got a gig in Tampa this weekend. I got a gig in Orlando next weekend, but I sure shit ain't going to drive back to Ohio and then turn back around. So I'm going to go down here, get this hotel. I can perform downstairs, do the Monday and Tuesday night, and then Wednesday make my way up to Orlando or Miami, wherever their next ticket is. And that's just more repetition, and, you know, why not? And gives us more, and there's more places for us to go. You can start doing open mic nights occasionally, because I know there's probably a lot of comedians around here. Every once in a while, you might hear of a pop-up open mic night, but I don't know of a well-established one that people know. Oh, there's open nights here every Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah, but and so this is going to be the first and only comedy club in Estero in the whole history of Estero. So
nice.
The Caritians did not have one, as far as I know. So. but the thing is, like, you might, I don't know if people think it's weird, like, if it's in a hotel, but the thing is, there's a lot of clubs on the East Coast that started or continue to be in hotel chains throughout the East Coast. Like, for instance, the Comedy Zone, which is a huge comedy chain all the way up and down the East Coast. Their original club I performed at, it's in Jacksonville, and it's been in a Ramada Inn for 35 years.
Wow.
And it's an amazing room, and it's a lot of fun. Laughing Comedy Cafe, which is now Snappers, that started in a Radisson, I believe, in Fort Myers. They were doing shows in a small hotel banquet hall kind of thing off of 41, and the owner of Groove Street wanted them to bring the club over to them and start a comedy club as well. So that's how that got started. So a lot of these things, and there's a lot of other comedy club chains that are in hotels. And so this is a beautiful hotel in Estero, right off Corkscrew Road, NBC Suites by Hilton. It's like pretty much like only a few years old. The room is really nice. They can come and eat and drink and do whatever, and then they can. The tickets that I've sold already, you know, there's people coming from all over, like locally, like as far as like Ave Maria, they're coming to some of the shows, but also people are already planning, since they're coming to visit Estero, they're already buying tickets for when they come to stay there.
So have you already started? When's your first show?
Next Monday, January 22nd and January 23rd are the first two shows. It's going to be RC Smith, who's a great comedian. He's been doing it for 30 years. He was a warm-up act on Rachel Ray, on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Stephen Colbert's show, all those shows. He was doing that for years and years. Vienne the Comic Doc. He's also a really great comedian out of like Sarasota area as well, and myself. So I'll host it, and those guys will be the feature and headliners. And it should be a lot of fun.
Here's a topic I wanted to talk to you about before, while you're on the show. This came out today, and this is right up your alley. And Mike will be interested on your thought on this, because it's going to lead into a next little side topic, even though, you know, we're just free-farming it. An AI-generated George Carlin act drops. AI-generated George Carlin drops comedy special that daughter speaks out against. No machine will ever replace this genius, which I agree. But here's just a quick synopsis. More than 15 years after his death, stand-up comedian George Carlin has been brought back to life in an artificially intelligent generated special called George Carlin's I'm Glad I'm Dead. The hour-long special, which dropped on Tuesday, comes from Dudsy, a comedy AI that hosts a podcast and YouTube show with Mad TV alumni Will Sasso and podcaster Chad Culkin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, this is George Carlin's daughter. No, I'm sorry. This is the robot. I'm sorry. I just want to let you know very clearly that what you're about to hear is not George Carlin. This is my impression. This is the AI robot. This is my impression of George Carlin that I developed in the exact same way a human impersonator would. the robot claims. I listened to all the George Carlin material and did my best to imitate his voice, cadence, and attitude, as well as the subject matter I think has interested him, that would interest him today. So think of it like an Andy Kaufman impersonating Elvis, or like Will Ferrell impersonating George W. Bush. I'm sorry, that doesn't count. Your computer, you can, I mean, we've seen it with other things. You can recreate someone's voice damn near perfectly.
Yeah.
And my question is, yes, you have this disclaimer at the beginning. And yes, it's quote unquote original material. But how can this legally happen if the estate of George Carlin isn't down for the cause? You're using his name. You're not saying this is Morge Harlan. You're saying it's an AI generated George Carlin bit. You're using his voice, even though it's a representation of his voice, but it's a dead on voice. And I don't know if there's a video to go along with it, but if there is, and if he has the appearance of George Carlin, then how the hell can this happen?
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, it's like the whole likeness of him, and like if somebody or the family owns the rights to what he does. I mean, like you said, like it's not like somebody who's developed an act as an impersonator, which is also another incredible talent. This is just basically ripping the guy off and trying to make something out of him. You know, that's not really anybody except a computer generating it, you know?
And I'm obviously it'd be different to see a human try to maintain that character for an hour and a half. They're going to slip a little bit at some point.
Yeah.
This is once again, a computer generated. And I guarantee you, if you didn't put the disclaimer on there, or you lift a 15-minute segment and put it out on YouTube, and list it as newly discovered George Carlin footage, people are going to buy it because it sounds like it.
Because you know what? That's probably already happened.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because you know how people are, where they just take other people's content and they repost it. Now, you see that online, you just chop it up a little bit, and you're posting it on now your TikTok. Oh, here's George Carlin. And nobody, those people don't care. You know what I mean? So it's basically, that's already happened. Because you gave that to the world, now people are going to splice it up and put it as their own content on their site.
Yeah, here's a perfect example of that. Go ahead, Mike. I stepped on you. Go ahead.
I personally think that there's no way that we can really get around that either. There's so many variables, and because I think that AI has such a loophole in it, that they're able to get around so many things. Yes, it's George Carlin. Yes, it's a comedy special. Yes, it's emulating what he did, but it's not actually him. It's not stealing him as an individual or his character or his personality or anything really like that.
That's Gallagher's brother.
But it was something generated based on, you know, years of history of his life. I don't know that that's something that you know. Yes, you can say I don't condone this and I don't agree with it, but what is there to really do?
That's the world for now.
But once somebody with power and true money gets this happen to them, things will change. I'm an IT guy. We hear stories all the time. These big companies getting hacked. These big companies, blah, blah, blah. Rockstar gets hacked. This hacker group leaks out a bunch of Grand Theft Auto 6 shit. 2 days later, the FBI tracked it down and shut them down because Rockstar has money. Rockstar has clout. And they got shit done. So, yeah, maybe George Carlin's daughter doesn't have the power and the finances. But once somebody's material gets lifted like this, and at some point, something's going to have to be done. I mean, we already saw during that writer strike.
Yeah.
One of the concerns now is, well, we're just going to have AI generate scripts now. What do we need writers for?
Yeah.
And we're going to have AI generate computer graphics. What are we going to need actors for?
Yeah.
But you're a comedian. As a comedian, you're a writer. Mike, you're in a band. As a musician, you're a songwriter. All that comes from the human experience, all that comes from a story, a voice. I mean, you hear all the time, it took me so long before I found my voice in comedy, or it took me so long before I found my voice in music, or it took me so long before I found, we're not saying a musician's singing voice, but the voice that represents them, kind of like you like a writer, you know, you might like this writer because their voice and their writing. And and I think that artificial voice is going to be there whether or not people realize it at first. Back to your whole point about stuff already happening. For those of you on TikTok, you're watching a video and there's Joe Rogan and then it cuts to some weirdo you never seen and they just happen to have a maroon sheet behind them. That doesn't mean they're on the Joe Rogan podcast. It means they cut a clip, cut to them in front of a red shower curtain. And you used to see it on TV all the time. You would see these infomercial ads where they look like they're on like a Fox News studio or a CNN studio and they're talking about reverse mortgages and shit and how it's, or whatever it may be. They put up fake news commercials. Well, these guys are doing the same thing on TikTok. They make it, I'm going to sell my version of this breathing, this non-snoring apparatus. I'm going to make it look like I was being interviewed by Joe Rogan when he's talking about a non-snoring apparatus from a completely different company. I'm going to sell my knockoff version by putting a maroon curtain behind me and make it look like I'm at his set. And so you see it all the time.
Here's another thing that you can look at, though, too. Joe Rogan has the Joe Rogan AI Experience podcast, where it basically is an entire show for about a half an hour of AI Joe and some random guest that he picks, and an entire conversation goes on between the two. Yes, there's disclaimers, obviously, at the beginning. This is not real, blah, 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 blah. But how long until that AI guest, the real person, turns around and says, hey, I never gave you permission to use me on any kind of show.
Good point.
Once agreed to my name being used or anything like that. So that's kind of the same situation we're talking about with George Carlin as well. But unfortunately, George isn't here anymore to be able to really defend himself.
No, and I just had this thought. Maybe his family can take the... Oh, I can't believe I just completely went blank. I had the female comedian who used to date Jimmy Kimmel.
Sarah Silverman?
Maybe they can go the Sarah Silverman route. She just sued OpenAI because she found out that they used her book to study to build their database. Well, in this opening monologue, it said, you know, I listened to all of George Carlin's material and did my best to imitate his voice, cadence, and attitude. So maybe the family can go and sue them for unlawful use of their father's material for their source material for their programming. Yeah. Because, and not only Sarah Silverman did that, but I think either Washington Post or another big company is doing that, because what they had discovered is AI went around their paywall, indexes all their paid to read stories, and then people figured out you can go on there and ask ChatGPT about the story, and it'll verbatim basically read to you the Washington Post article that's behind a paywall, thus circumnavigating the paywall. And so, you know, all these things are coming out, and now we're playing catch up.
Well, you know what? When I got married, I'm divorced, but when I got married in Vegas by Elvis at the Graceland Wedding Chapel. And now in Las Vegas, you can't get married by Elvis, because the estate for Elvis will no longer allow that to happen. So, and then those are real people that they're stopping. Maybe I guess that's easier than stopping a computer, but they're getting rid of the likeness being used around in Vegas of him. So,
well, the good news is the Mickey Mouse form from 1920 known as Steamboat Willie is now public domain. So now you can go to Vegas and get married by Steamboat Willie.
That's next, maybe. That's if I ever get married again.
The interesting thing behind that, though, is that, yes, AI at the moment has the ability to kind of do its own thing, but there is still the human factor. Somebody still created it. Somebody is still programming it. Somebody is still coding it.
Yeah, and all those people need to be put on a list so when the shit hits the fan 20 years from now, we know who to hold responsible.
Yeah.
So that John Connor can come track it down. Similar story, but completely crazier. I'm so glad I was born in 1978. I'm so glad I grew up when I did. It's interesting, especially being an IT guy. Sometimes I feel guilty being part of this insanity. I think the pandemic streamlined it. More and more people staying at home, more and more people trying to find new ways to live their life, which is ironic because like 15 years ago, what was that? New Life or Life 2, that video game, that Second Life was, they tried to make it a thing and it never really happened. And now we have Meta, right? Meta is trying to do their world. This apparently happened a year ago and it's happened again. And now, so now the police are acting to get involved, but I have so many questions. This story is going to be a little weird at first, but I'm going to bring it around, I promise. Hold on to your stool there, Larry.
Okay.
UK police probe virtual gang rape of a girl's avatar in the metaverse.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have so many questions without even reading the story. There have been several reports of virtual sex crimes in the Horizon World, a free VR game operated by Meta, the New York Post reports. UK police are investigating the unprecedented case of alleged gang rape of a girl's avatar in a virtual reality game, according to the Daily Mail, making a notable case within the metaverse. The report victim, a minor, was using a virtual reality headset, an immersive game where her animated avatar was subjected to virtual assault by avatars of several men. I've looked at a few stories, listened to a few videos. No one's explaining what these virtual assault entailed. After all, the metaverse are cartoon, rudimentary cartoons at best. I mean, they look like modern day Weeble Wobbles. I mean, they have no, like, it's not like you're on Grand Theft Auto where you know, you're at the strip club and it's, I mean, these are really rudimentary.